Chris Whittle.
Well, I'm aware of the concerns in relation to this issue. My party proposed a motion at the Assembly to ensure that there was a full public inquiry into matters relating to Belfast City Airport, and we want to see an urgent delivery of that. I've dealt with a number of constituent inquiries regards flight times outside of their normal hours, and we've sought robust response from the airport in relation to that. But we recognise that it is an ongoing concern, and that we need to have open, transparent information from the airport.
John Cowell.
Thank you, Mark. I think we've got to realise that the airport's been in the news quite a lot over the past couple of weeks. We've got to realise that Belfast City Airport employ PR agents. They put a lot of money into promoting their case. And we have had both a charm offensive and scare tactics from the airport about this runway extension. The issue really is one of noise. We've got two airports in Northern Ireland, two good airports. The question is, with Belfast City Airport being where it is, it does affect those who live close to it, and the main source of trouble is the noise from the aircraft. And you'll have noticed that there was a big change when Ryanair withdrew, and those slots were filled by other airports recently. What basically needs to be done is there needs to be a noise control limit placed on Belfast City Airport. It's what's called an indicative contour. It was what was recommended by the examination in public some years ago. It's something that has been talked about for several years, but Belfast City Airport have not agreed to it, and it basically sets a limit for the amount of noise that should come from the airport. That's what needs to be done. The airport need to agree to it, it needs to be put into the planning conditions, and it needs to be enforced. And that gives security and confidence for the residents that actually this airport is not going to get noisier and noisier and noisier with more and more big jets coming in and out day after day.
Sammy Douglas, how do you strike the balance between business wanting a busier airport and the residents wanting a peaceful way to live?
In fact, that was one of the points I was going to make, but I'm glad Joe raised it at this point, because this was on the agenda, and maybe I've missed it, but it's been, I know that the aircraft have been quiet, but the group have also been quiet as well. And my office is on Newton Arts Road, and I hear the planes going over, and I have to stop having meetings with people because I understand the problems with the noise. The other thing is that the other side of Cowan, it is one of the biggest employers, not just in East Belfast, but Northern Ireland, providing good jobs for many people from East Belfast. But the other thing, I've spoken to people from the airport within the last 6 months, and they've said that they have introduced measures and it has cut down on noise in Iran or way as well. But maybe there's another opportunity maybe to raise old profile again, Joe, so I'd be happy enough getting involved in something like that just to find out if we can start dealing with this again, if it's still a problem.
And just finally, Michael Copeman, as East Belfast representative.
Just to say to May that I was looking for you in the TT coat smoking at the door on the way in. From I was on your page before I came out, but I didn't spot you in the dark. Thank you. No, I'm familiar with the problems. The airport provides a service. I'm not as convinced as Sammy that everybody that works in the airport is from East Belfast.
And I didn't say
there's a, no, a lot. No, I'm not Sammy as convinced about that. Look, it's a benefit, provided that it's a benefit that's exercised without detriment to the people who live in the area. And there are a lot of people who are concerned about it. There are regulations and there are rules that may be tested, that may be expanded upon. Whatever happens has to strike the balance, as John has said, between the commercial necessities of the real world and the rights of the people who live in the flight path. There are also considerations about what it feels like to live under a flight path, because it's not just the noise for some people. It actually is quite scary on occasions. And there have been major cities where accidents have occurred. I'm not quite sure of the circumstances, but I understand a committee from Stormont recently visited somewhere in France, and there was an airport in the centre of the town that they visited. And they went and looked at buses, I think it was, and somebody on the way back mentioned the difficulties at the city airport, and this airport was cited as a wonderful example. The problem was that airport's being closed down because the town didn't actually find it as attractive as everyone else.
Gentleman here, I think you've got the mic, haven't you?
Ken.
Wilkinson. I'm a representative of a group called FAST, and in case anybody thinks that I'm originally from East Belfast, born and reared in Newton Arch Road.
I thought you were here to represent Belfast International Airport for a moment there, Ken, from answering.
Anything, but come out my way and I'll tell you about the asthma, the effects where the flight path goes over Temple Patrick, you know, one of the biggest stars, man.
Anyway, sorry, yeah.
But anyway, regarding the group called Fast, the lady in front of me asked, had on it earlier on about the Supergrass trials, and it was skimmed over very, very quickly. And I think people should know some of the facts that are actually there. And I want to make it quite clear that I'm not against justice. The group isn't against justice. What we are about is a system that has been used. We have a devolved government now in Northern Ireland. We'll have a new justice minister. We're going back till the 1980s, till a failed process. But out of that, and I listened to a lady from the issues of human rights, and we're also talking about rights of people. We have 13 people who are sitting on trial on the ward. Okay. The people that have been used within the system. And this doesn't just affect everywhere. This affects right across. But the point that I am making is
sure.
That we now had other things that were coming out about the tapes, the Boston tapes. People want to take a look at them. It seems to be that the present time within Northern Ireland, there is only one section of the community that was involved in the troubles, and that's loyalism. Now, we'll have a system that's in place at the present time, the Supergrass trial. Who would want to take out the people who delivered the peace process, who delivered the Good Friday Agreement, who delivered the decommissioning, and are now trying to take ex-combatants down a peaceful road? What agenda has been played? Now, we have met human rights groups and other groups.
Okay.
They weren't interested
yeah.
in the system that has been used. What they were interested in, a lot of them were bringing down the state. Not about loyalism.
Okay.
And but no, there's other things, Mark. They talk about families, mm-hmm. and I'm not going to go on like this guy. But when we talk about human rights and about rights of people...
It's just I've got a whole stack full of right. people I'm trying to keep their human rights as well by allowing them to get in.
Right, these are people that have been denied
okay.
young people their education.
That's great.
One young man committed suicide through this case.
Yeah. Okay, look, thank you very much. Did anybody want to say anything on that issue?
Well,
I know you all went round.
Yeah, just on the broader issue, I think in terms we have to keep a separation between the legislator and the judiciary, and I think that's a fundamental of justice. But on the broader principles and what Cain was referring to there, people operating in the shadows. I am of the view that there is people operating in the shadows who are trying to bring down the peace process for whatever reason. And you can see that operating in so-called dissident Republican organisations as well. I see some people floating around those organisations and I have to scratch my head when I look at them and go, how on earth is that person able to operate in the way they are beyond a apparent police approach. So we all have to be vigilant about this. This peace was hard, hard won, and we should not allow anyone from any section, whether from this society or from outside this society, to bring down this peace process. So let's all remain vigilant on that process.
Gentleman at the back who's had the microphone for quite a long time now.
Hello. I really wanted to address some remarks to the Minister and we'd welcome his opinions on them. Can I first of all apologise? I want to talk about education and
Okay, just try and make it a question rather than a speech.
Okay. I've got to make a statement first
because there have been
a number of issues about education which have been raised. One about shared education, which has suddenly become a theme. And it's become a rhetorical theme because essentially the real issues of education are not being dealt with because there's no consensus at Assembly to deal with them. And so we're into the stage now of a safe rhetoric, talking about shared education. And Mr. Copeland, I think, referred to five types of education in Northern Ireland. Well, there aren't five types of education in Northern Ireland. There are five types of governing bodies and governing authorities in Northern Ireland. The education really across all of the schools is more or less the same, and that's very important. There's been a lot of talk about Protestant working class boys underachievement. And it really gets to me because I've been in education a long time and it's not Protestant working class boys underachieving. It's boys underachieving throughout the whole system. And if any of you want to go home and look in your websites at the top schools and look at the GCSE results and A-level results and interrogate those, you'll see that the expectations, the academic expectations for our children are slowly crumbling in the midst of a rhetorical debate about transfer and now about shared education. And what I welcomed...
Can you come to the point of the question? Because I'm going to have to break off if you don't come to it now.
I have been in education a long time.
Yeah, we've got that. Come on.
Miss Ruan will be remembered fondly for her failure to resolve the transfer procedure. Can I ask the Minister what failure he would like to be remembered for?
Okay.
Well, I'm not a career politician, and no intentions of becoming a career politician, but all political careers end in failure. In one form or another, it depends who you talk to at the end of your political journey as to what people have their opinion on you, and so be it. So somebody else will write that rather than I will write that. But let's be clear about this. Education is a vital component of our lives, and we have to ensure that we drive and continue to drive it forward. And there will be political disagreements on it, because I think that in one way can be healthy as long as those political disagreements and those political debates are held in a mature atmosphere. And the last education debate was held in the first assembly. We were getting to know each other when the DUP and Sinn Féin were bouncing off each other and the UUP and everybody else was bouncing off each other. So that was the atmosphere of that. And I don't think you can blame Katrina for that or any of the other participants in that. So the transfer debate remains important. The shared education debate remains important. How we raise educational attainment debate remains important. And education and debating education remains important. And I welcome the fact that we're in this hall tonight, in this community, and the vast majority of the questions have been about education. How we improve people's lives. And I think there's one failure I do not want to be remembered for, and that is the educational failure of either boys or girls. And you're right when you say, and identify boys. And I'm always conscious when I use these statistics that you're almost balancing things out. You're seeing, there's a higher percentage of Protestant boys leaving school without proper qualifications. There's a higher number of Catholic boys leaving school without proper qualifications. So the Catholic sector has a lot of work to do as well. And I, as a minister, have a lot of work to do for both of them.
OK. Hang on a moment. This gentleman over here has been waiting a long time. He's got a microphone. Okay.
Sorry, I just want to go off in a different angle here, John. I know you wanted to talk education all night. But I just wanted to know what the panel know about. I know there's a consultation about the corporation tax rates being looked at in Northern Ireland. I know that consultation period is over now. So I want to know what's actually happening. Is there any kind of time scale and how likely or otherwise that will be addressed?
Sammy Douglas?
Well, certainly, from what I know and listen in the Assembly, that things are progressing reasonably quickly. Now, in terms of the corporation tax, I spoke to someone recently who works in Belfast and Dublin, and what he was saying was this, was that in terms of corporation tax, Northern Ireland and Republic of Ireland, very similar in terms of education, even the weather is a similar, whole lot of similarities in terms of business people wanting to come in and invest. But what he was saying was the difference is this, is that in the Irish Republic, they have a corporation tax. He said that is a silver bullet about trying to attract people in. Now, having said that, there are figures of £300 to £400 million been bandied about. It's how we actually raise the money to do that. I certainly wouldn't want to be raising the money, you know, tomorrow, taking £400 million out of where we are at the moment. So maybe it's a stage, or maybe it's trying to get a loan of the Exchequer, and those negotiations are going on. So in terms of overall, I'm quite supportive of corporation tax. Having said that there, with the one...
Cutting corporation tax, yeah. Michael Copeland, I mean, are the Conservatives going off this now, that they realise that Scotland might want a little bit more than just corporation tax?
I might be in a minority of one, but I'm not as convinced personally that the corporation tax perceived benefits will actually be what people think they'll be. I think the important thing is to establish... Thank you. What are you doing after this? I think there's two separate things here. There's to establish the right in principle to vary a tax, and then there's the right to exercise that right. Corporation tax, in my experience, is not something that you really have to pay. if you have a correct set of accountants and the correct company structures, you can actually tax avoidance to a degree. And I do know, we heard from Bumper Graham from NPSA today, who basically believed that the proper collection of all taxes due under the current system would go a very long way towards addressing the shortfalls that are perceived in the welfare system. For example, in the current welfare system, they very conveniently group fraud and error together. But error actually has two components, the error committed by the state and the error committed by the customer or the claimant. And strangely enough, the error committed by the state and the fraud is less than the fraud. It's a very complex matter. I remain unconvinced that corporation tax is the panacea people think it is.
Now, there's a lady in a white coat at the back who I was very distressed. I thought you marched out because I'd ignored you for so long, but then you came back, so I want to get you in before you leave again.
Basically, this is just an issue that's been affecting myself and my family. On the 21st of December 2010, my daughter was struck by an illness. This illness then led her to go to the Royal Victoria Hospital, where she was an inpatient until April. She was very, very ill. On discharge from hospital, we had to return to my parents' house because they live on a ground, on a flat surface, and my daughter was then using a wheelchair. She had to learn how to walk and how to talk and everything again. Now, there's been a few issues raised from this. My life has turned up upside down since this happened. I have had to leave my job. I am well qualified. I've had a job. I was actually a manager in a managerial role. I just feel stranded at the minute. We are fighting. The whole family has fallen apart since this has happened. This was a real tragedy. We're trying to pull ourselves back together now and pick up the pieces. I am met by people from the housing executive whenever I put in for, you know, a new home. I explained the circumstances. I was advised by the social worker in the hospital to do this. And their attitude is, well, you're asking rather a lot. And I think that's totally wrong, just to pick up on this lady before. My daughter really can't live in our home at the moment. There's steps up to my home. We live on a hill. It's hard. I can't even get the car up, and I have two other young children. My health isn't good at the moment either. And, you know, this is the attitude that you're faced by people in these offices every day of the week, whenever I'm phoning, whenever I'm trying to get help, and it's ridiculous. And really, I'm just here tonight as well to thank Michael Copeland too, because without his help, I would really be screwed. He's done so much for us. And this is what families are faced day in, day out. This was through no fault of our own. As I said, I've had to leave work. We've had no follow-up. We've had very little help. And I know that I'm lucky to be standing here tonight and have a daughter who is as healthy as she is. And there's a lot of people who are a lot worse off and who have lost children. And the hospital itself as well, this is just a general, the hospital itself as well has no MRI scanner. I mean, there's money for this and that and everything else that's going on. And everybody has an issue that's important to them. But what can be more important than somebody's health?
Well, that's a real concern if ever there was one. I was going to ask if you'd what comeback you'd had from your elected representatives. You've obviously already been in touch with Michael, but which agency of government do you think the buck is stopping with and isn't pulling their finger out right now?
Well, really, you know, there's obviously, I understand there's red tape and everything goes on, and it's all about money. Everything hinges around finance. But I think everybody up at Stormont, no matter what department you're in, has to take a responsibility for whoever comes into your office on a daily basis, no matter what they have an issue with housing, with health, with money, with finance, with DLA forms, appeals, you name it, everybody up there. But without people's health, again, this is my main point, without the health of people, you guys, you know, you'll have nobody to come into your offices. You'll have nobody to, you know, help sort out, basically. And this is just, I am so cross about everything that's happened. And I just feel that it's just not good enough.
This might be the sort of one where you want to talk to people individually afterwards, yes. Unless anybody wants to say anything, probably not.
It's
from the
more of a general
issue,
but I just think
I think it's well worth raising, definitely,
it.
Definitely. Quick word from Chris.
Briefly, it sounds like Michael's helping in terms of the individual inquiry, but my colleague Anna Lowe is raising the issue of the lack of MRI scanner in Northern Ireland at the moment as well, so it's something that we can come back to you on as well.
Sorry, gentleman over there has been waiting, I think, for some time. Lady, sorry.
I can't stand up.
Not to worry.
I'm speaking for people who are long-term unemployed. of all ages, from the school-leaving age onwards, where they can learn, an opportunity to learn new interests, new activities, new abilities, new knowledge, and generally develop the purpose in their lives. They're not going to get paid, but they're going to have a much more satisfactory life. It is educational, and please think how this can be done.
Okay. Okay, thanks very much. Sorry, lady over here has also been waiting for a while.
Yeah, it's more to address the issue of European funding for Northern Ireland. Maurice Maxwell has recently said there's potential for a fourth peace fund for Northern Ireland, and also there's a big budget for research and development work throughout Europe. But the DUP, for one, was very critical of the relationship with European Union back in the Conservatives. And I think it's important that people in Northern Ireland know how much the European Union do here and how do they want to educate the masses on that.
So, Sammy Douglas, DUP Eurosceptic, but always happy to take the money if there's a European grant for anything.
Oh, absolutely. And as a former member of the Belfast European Partnership Board, I saw the excellent work that that agency did and given out tens of millions of pounds. And also, I was speaking to Dan Dawes recently, who's raised the whole issue about Peace Corps, and she's working with others. And certainly, this isn't about a handout, this isn't about a grant, because at the end of the day, it's taxpayers' money from the UK and Northern Ireland that actually pays into Europe, so we're actually getting some of our tax back. But very good point, but I would be quite pro-European myself as an individual.
There's a gentleman at the back here who's trying to get in. Yep.
Thank you. An issue which is close to my heart and close to the heart of a lot of young people in Northern Ireland is that of higher education. What do the members of the panel, and indeed the minister himself, are there any incentives or policies you have on keeping homegrown talent here in Northern Ireland rather than moving away to England and staying there?
John Carl, I don't think we've heard from you for a while, and then we'll move across the panel.
There clearly is a difficulty with our young people post-secondary school, tertiary education, moving away from Northern Ireland. On the one hand, I think it is very good for people who live here to live outside of Northern Ireland for a couple of years and see the world from a different perspective. I think what we need to do is to make it more enticing for them to return here. And that does clearly involve offering job opportunities. I think that in fairness to the executive, they have put a lot of time and energy into attracting investment at the high end of the market. And I think for university graduates who go away, they need to be made aware of the fact that there are highly skilled jobs here in Northern Ireland, and be drawn back. So we need to get that message out, because I think that message hasn't got through to school leavers, and they leave, they go to Dundee and Glasgow and Edinburgh, and then they join the milk grinder, though there are no jobs in England really north of the Watford Gap. So we essentially, there are jobs coming, there need to be more jobs, we need to make people aware of that. But I think it's a fallacy to think that you can prevent young people leaving Northern Ireland to go to university elsewhere. John, and there's something to be said for it.
John O'Dowd, after May, you might just possibly be in charge of the universities as well as schools. We've yet to find out the details, unless you want to tell us right now.
We'll wait to see what happens after May.
But are there going to be jobs for the graduates who come out of our universities?
Well, firstly, what we have to ensure is that university education is about self-fulfilment, first and foremost. It's about the individual going through that journey in life and fulfilling themselves and add value to their lives. Certainly as a society and as a government, as an economy, we want those young people who value themselves, who have learned that knowledge, to come back out and invest their time and effort in society and play part in that building blocks. I think in shorthand, what we have done to encourage young people to go to university is we've kept student fees. The executive made a decision to cap student fees at £3,400. when you've seen in England and Scotland where they were rising dramatically up towards £9,000. I think that measure in itself allows people the opportunity to go to university and take that pathway forward. I just want to mention quickly the lady at the back who quite rightly mentioned about the long-term unemployed and helping this generation. The term lost generation is a term I do not like. It accurately reflects the position that many young people are in, but if we keep telling our young people in this generation, the generation coming up, that you're lost, they will eventually believe it. Young people in this the younger generation should not allow my generation or any other generation to take away their future or chances, and they should be encouraged to stand up and defend their rights and encouraged to become involved in the political structures, community, and have their voices heard. Allow no one to describe you as being lost.
That's two bad BBC headlines in 2 days, eh? From his objection to the other one. Right, okay. Sorry, there's another young person over there who's trying to... No, sorry, the young girl over there.
With the proposed changes to the statements of educational needs, how can you ensure that the appropriate training is given to help children in special needs education?
You don't have to take my word for it on this one. I have no intentions of removing the legal protection for young people with special educational needs. But more importantly, any changes I bring forward will have to be voted on by the Assembly. And I have no doubt that the other 107 MLAs in the Assembly will not allow a reduction in the rights of children with special educational needs. So there is the safeguards right away.
We're coming towards the end of the time. Lady here with the microphone and this gentleman over there.
Hello, I just want to say thanks very much for letting me speak again, because I know I spoke, was the first one to speak and kind of threw away my question.
You have to be really quick.
Okay, my name's Cathy McCulloch and I run a local community organisation based in East Belfast supporting women's mental health. And my question is directed towards Sammy Douglas. I know you have a background in community work yourself, but I actually find it unacceptable that you used Iris Robinson's mental health problems as an excuse for the appalling decisions and actions that were surrounding the whole scandal with Iris Robinson. Myself, I have suffered very serious mental health problems and have family members who do, and it inspired me to go into community work in East Belfast, where the situation is actually appalling for local people, men and women. And it's all right for people like Iris Robinson, who, I mean, I can definitely sympathise if she has serious mental health problems, but she has the money and the ability to go over to London to a fancy clinic and get well, whereas there's people who are actually suffering because of other social problems, lack of education, lack of benefits, you know, people are getting their DLA taken away from them and everything, and hospitals are being closed down, okay. And there's not enough support for people in the community. So I'm saying, what are you actually doing for people's mental health? And also just to make the point that it's not an excuse to actually throw away that man's question about the whole scandal to say that she had mental health problems. That's not acceptable.
Sammy Douglas.
Well, I'm surprised at your response, and I'll tell you why, because one of the things I was saying was that, and this was in the media, but there was a mentioned in person, and the media had shown very clearly that this woman had tried to take her own life. My brother took his own life last week, as an example, which is a taboo subject for us all. And that's why I'm saying it, because I'm hoping to raise issues like that. I was up with Peter Robinson yesterday, looking at things like addiction to drugs, to alcohol, and very often that's about mental health issues as well. I've had mental health issues in my family. I've had three people in my immediate family who have committed. I'll give you an example. There's a number of our organisations that are now working in terms of advice. We have had some of these organisations up to Stormont. I'm working with the Northern Ireland Association of Mental Health, which my wife also works for.
Yeah.